Chapter 29, Reclaiming the Lost. After we had reached our home, we felt most sensibly that the wearing labors of our Eastern tour. Many were urging me by letter to write what I had related to them of what the Lord had shown me concerning them, and there were many others to whom I had not spoken whose cases were important and urgent. In my weary condition, the task of so much writing seemed more than I could endure, and I called in question my duty to write so much to so many persons, some of them very unworthy. It seemed to me that there was certainly a mistake in this matter somewhere, an encouraging dream. One night I dreamed that a person brought to me a web of white cloth and bade me cut it into garments for persons of all sizes and all descriptions of character and circumstances in life. I was told to cut them out and hang them up all ready to be made when called for. I had the impression that many for whom I was required to cut garments were unworthy. I inquired if that was the last piece of cloth I should have to cut, and was told that it was not, that as soon as I had finished this one, there were others for me to take hold of. I felt discouraged at the amount of work before me, and stated that I had been engaged in cutting garments for others for more than 20 years, and my labors had not been appreciated, neither did I see that my work had accomplished much good. I spoke to the person who brought the cloth to me, of one woman in particular, for whom he had told me to cut a garment. I stated that she would not prize the garment, and that it would be a loss of time and material to present it to her. She was very poor, of inferior intellect, and untidy in her habits, and would soon soil it. The person replied, "Cut out the garments. That is your duty. The loss is not yours, but mine. God sees not as man sees. He lays out the work that he would have done, and you do not know which will prosper, this or that. It will be found that many such poor souls will go into the kingdom, while others who are favored with all the blessings of life, having good intellects and pleasant surroundings, giving them all the advantages of improvement, will be left out. It will be seen that these poor souls have lived up to the feeble light which they had, and have improved by the limited means within their reach, and live much more acceptably than some others who have enjoyed full light and ample means for improvement." I then held up my hands, calloused as they were with the long use of shears, and stated that I could but shrink at the thought of pursuing this kind of labor. The person again repeated, "Cut out the garments, your release has not yet come." With feelings of great weariness, I arose to engage in the work. Before me lay new polished shears, which I commenced using. At once, my feelings of weariness and discouragement left me. The shears seemed to cut with hardly an effort on my part, and I cut out garment after garment with comparative ease. Visiting churches in Michigan. With the encouragement which this dream gave me, I at once decided to accompany my husband and Brother Andrews to Gratiot, Saginaw, and Tuscola counties, and trust in the Lord to give me strength to labor. So on the 7th of February, we left home and rode 55 miles to our appointment at Alma. Here I labored as usual with a good degree of freedom and strength. The friends in Gratiot County seemed interested to hear. At Tittabawassee, we found a large house of worship recently built by our people, well filled with Sabbath keepers. The brethren seemed ready for our testimony, and we enjoyed freedom. The next day, 15 were baptized. At Vassar, we held our meeting Sabbath and first day at the Union Schoolhouse. This was a free place in which to speak, and we saw good fruit of our labors. First day afternoon, about 30 backsliders and children who had made no profession came forward for prayers. Caring for the sick. We returned home from this tour just before a great fall of rain which carried off the snow. This storm prevented the next Sabbath meeting, and I immediately commenced to prepare matter for testimony number 14. We also had the privilege of caring for our dear brother Seneca King, whom we brought to our home with a terrible injury upon the head and face. We took him to our house to die, for we could not think it possible for one with a skull so terribly broken in to recover. But with the blessing of God, upon a very gentle use of water, a very spare diet, till the danger of fever was past, and well-ventilated rooms day and night, in 3 weeks he was able to return to his home and attend to his farming interests. He did not take one grain of medicine from first to last. although he was considerably reduced by loss of blood from his wounds and by spare diet, yet when he could take up a more normal amount of food, he came up rapidly. Revival meetings at Greenville. About this time, we commenced labor for our friends and brethren near Greenville. As is the case in many places, our brethren needed help. There were some who kept the Sabbath, yet did not belong to the church, and also some who had given up the Sabbath. We felt disposed to help these poor souls, but the past course and present position of healing members of the church in relation to these persons made it almost impossible for us to approach them. In laboring with the erring, some of our brethren had been too rigid, too cutting in remarks, and when some were disposed to reject their counsel and separate from them, they would say, "Well, if they want to go off, let them go." While such a lack of the compassion and long-suffering and tenderness of Jesus was manifest by his professed followers, these poor, erring, inexperienced souls, buffeted by Satan, were certain to make shipwreck of faith. However great may be the wrongs and sins of the erring, our brethren should learn to manifest not only the tenderness of the great shepherd, but also his undying care and love for the poor straying sheep. Our ministers toil and lecture week after week and rejoice that a few souls embrace the truth, and yet brethren of a prompt, decided turn of mind may in 5 minutes destroy their work by indulging the feelings which prompt words like these, "Well, if they want to leave us, let them go." We found that we could do nothing for the scattered sheep near us until we had first corrected the wrongs in many of the members of the church. They had let these poor souls wander. They felt no burden for them. I wrote out pointed testimonies not only for those who had erred greatly and were out of the church, but for those members in the church who had erred greatly and not going in search of the lost sheep. The lost sheep. The Lord is giving the erring, the weak and trembling, and even those who have apostatized from the truth a special call to come fully into the fold. But many have not learned that they have a special duty to go and search for these lost sheep. The Pharisees murmured because Jesus received publicans and common sinners and ate with them. In their self-righteousness, they despised these poor sinners who gladly heard the words of Jesus. To rebuke this spirit in the scribes and Pharisees, and to leave an impressive lesson for all, the Lord gave the parable of the lost sheep. Notice in particular the following points. The 99 sheep are left, and diligent search is made for the one that is lost. The entire effort is made for the unfortunate sheep. So should the effort of the church be directed in behalf of those members who are straying from the fold of Christ. And have they wandered far away? Do not wait till they return before you try to help them, but go in search of them. When the lost sheep was found, it was borne home with joy, and much rejoicing followed. This illustrates the blessed, joyful work of laboring for the erring. The church that engages successfully in this work is a happy church. That man or that woman whose soul is drawn out in compassion and love for the erring and who labors to bring them to the fold of the great shepherd is engaged in a blessed work. And oh, what a soul-enrapturing thought that when one sinner is thus reclaimed, there is more joy in heaven than over 99 just persons. Selfish, exclusive, exacting souls who seem to fear to help those in error as though they would become polluted by so doing, do not taste of the sweets of this missionary work. They do not feel that blessedness that fills all heaven with rejoicing upon the rescue of one who has gone astray. That church or those persons who shut themselves away from bearing burdens for others, who shut themselves up to themselves, will soon suffer spiritual feebleness. It is labor that keeps the strong man strong. And spiritual labor, toil and burden-bearing, is what will give strength to the Church of Christ. En route to Battle Creek, Sabbath and first day, April 18 and 19, we enjoyed a good season with our people at Greenville. Brethren M.E. Cornell and M.G. Kellogg were with us. My husband baptized 8. The 25th and 26th, we were with the church in Wright. This dear people were ever ready to welcome us. Here my husband baptized 8. May 2, we met at a large congregation in the house of worship at Monterey. My husband spoke with clearness and force upon the parable of the lost sheep. The word was greatly blessed to the people. Some who had strayed were out of the church, and there were was no spirit of labor to help them. In fact, the stiff, stern, unfeeling position of some in the church was calculated to prevent their return, should they be disposed thus to do. This subject touched the hearts of all, and all manifested a desire to get right. On first day, we spoke three times in Allegan to good congregations. Our appointment was out to meet with the church at Battle Creek the 9th, but we felt that our work in Monterey was but just commenced, and we therefore decided to return to Monterey and labor with that church another week. The good work moved on, exceeding our expectations. The house was filled, and we never before witnessed such a work in Monterey in so short a time. First day, 50 came forward for prayers. Brethren felt deeply for the lost sheep and confessed their coldness and indifference and took a good stand. 14 were baptized. The work moved on with solemnity, confessions, and much weeping, carrying all before it. Thus closed the arduous labors of the conference year. The General Conference of May 1868. The General Conference was a season of deepest interest. The labors of my husband were very great during its numerous sessions. There were manifested to us at the conference sympathy, tender care, and benevolence.